It is May 26, 2018. Welcome once again to the Narkees Street Bible Study. And this morning, we're the portion of scripture we're looking at is Numbers 10, verses 1 through chapter 11, verses 15. And you can always follow along at home or wherever you are in the world from our website. The scripture is posted there before, and just stay up to date with the readings. And then the prophetic reading that goes along with this text is Isaiah 27, verse 13 and following. But really, I think it's just verse 13. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So let's open in prayer. God, thank you once again that we can come to your word. That you've passed on to us from the prophets and the kings and the priests and through the disciples and the apostles and all of those who have claimed to follow you, who've wanted to be in your will, to know your purposes for their lives, why you've created each one of us to bring you glory, to have a relationship with you. And we just ask this morning that you would speak to us in a relationship and that we could hear your voice. In your name we pray, Jesus. Amen. So, let's start by reading Numbers 10. And maybe we'll start with Gemma and we'll go around the table. If you'd like to read a few verses, please do.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Make two silver trumpets for yourself. You shall make them of hammered work. You shall use them for calling the congregation and for directing the movement of the camps. When they blow both of them, all the congregation shall gather before you at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. But if they blow only one, then the leaders, the heads of the divisions of Israel, shall gather to you. When you sound the advance, the camps that lie on the east side shall begin their journey. And when you sound the advance a second time, then the camps that lie on the south side shall begin their journey. They shall sound the call for them to begin their journeys. And when the assembly is to be gathered together, you shall blow, but not sound the advance. The sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow the trumpets, and these shall be to you as an ordinance forever throughout your generations.
And when you go to war, you will land against the adversary who oppresses you. Then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, that you may be remembered before the Lord your God, and you shall be saved from your enemies. On the day of your gladness also, and at your appointed feast, and at the beginning of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of the peace offerings. They shall be a reminder of you before your God. I am the Lord your God. In the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month, the cloud lifted and opened the tabernacle of the testimony. And the people of Israel set out by stages from the wilderness of Sinai. And the cloud set it down in the wilderness of Paran.
Numbers.
Yep. 11:17.
God was led by Elisha, son of Duel.
Great.
Do you want to go on into 11 or not?
We could, but okay, let's just read it.
Now the people complained about their hardship at the hearing of the Lord, and they heard him, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. And the people cried out to Moshe, prayed to the Lord, and the fire came down. So the place was called Dabarah, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. The rabble with them began to crave other food, and none of the Israelites started wailing and said, "If only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt, no fast. Also the cucumbers, lemons, beets, onions, and garlic. But now we have lost that appetite. We never see anything but this manna."
Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its color like the color of bdellium. The people went about and gathered it, ground it on millstones, or beat it in the mortar, cooked it in pans, and made cakes of it. And its taste was like the taste of pastry prepared with oil. And when the dew fell on the camp in the night, the manna fell on it. Then Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, everyone at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was greatly aroused. So Moses also was displeased. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you afflicted your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight? But you have laid the burden of all these people on me. Did I conceive all these people? Did I beget them that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers'? Where am I to get meat to give all these people? For they weep all over me, saying, 'Give us meat that we might eat.' I'm not able to bear all these people alone because the burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, please kill me here and now. If I found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness."
That's it.
That's it. Wow.
Jim, I read that part.
That's right. Hope you got some encouragement this morning.
You don't have to bear all the trouble.
Okay, so let's break down what we just read here at Numbers 10 and then that first section of Numbers 11. What's the first section, subject area of Numbers 10? The trumpets?
It's the trumpets and the calling to order of how the camp is to move.
How many trumpets?
Two.
Okay, great. What are they made of?
Silver.
And this is what we will focus on this morning, but we'll keep going. What's the next section in Numbers 10?
The order of...
Yeah, the order of the camp and how they march out, right? And who does it start with?
Judah.
And who does it end with?
Dan.
Okay, do you remember from earlier in Numbers, what was it, Numbers 4, Numbers 5, talks about the camps. Sorry? Yeah, I think that's it. Numbers 3? Yeah. No, that's Aaron. I think it's 4. Did you say Numbers 2? Okay, sorry.
And Numbers 2
yes.
Is the order, right?
Thank you. Numbers 2. And also, Numbers 1 talks about the analogy. But it talks about the camps here. And starts off there in Numbers 2 with Judah. So it kind of goes in our section here, Judah, Dan. Judah's camped where?
The east.
And we talked about this a few weeks ago. The east is where everything is oriented towards. word Orient is the east. And in the biblical time, you focus towards the east, not the north, like we do today. So east, and then what comes after the east?
South.
South. And where is Dan camped? Dan is camped in the north. Okay, so east, south, west, north.
So that's the difference the way we say it.
It's a little different, huh? So, I handed out these little diagrams of the camps before. They're kind of like, Judah down here. And then, so this is the east. This is the west. See, the west is Judah. It's Ephraim. Yeah. And then this is the north, and this is the south. Dan, and who's the south? This is Reuben, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and what's in the middle?
Tabernacle.
So if you go back and you read Numbers 2, Numbers 3, Numbers 4, it lays this all out. And who's the tribe in charge of tabernacle? Levi?
Levi.
And Levi is broken down into three, or you could argue four clans. Who are they?
Menari.
Yeah.
Gershon.
Kohath. And then the fourth one is Aaron. Technically, Aaron and Moses, right, the brothers, they come from Kohath. Let me just double check it here. It's Kohath, right? Yeah. Technically, Aaron and Moses are from this clan. But they have a whole separate, it's kind of like Ephraim and Manasseh were sons of Joseph, but then Jacob adopted Ephraim and Manasseh as sons. So they were no longer grandsons, they became sons. In a sense, that's how I kind of view Aaron and Moses' line, which are the sons of Aaron. They're called sons of Aaron. So the Aaronites, or the Aaronoids, or whatever you want to call them. Yeah, that's how some people put them.
Really?
Yeah, Aaronoids.
Does that imply that they're not really Aaron?
Aaronoids?
Yeah. Like a factoid is like a fact, but it's not really a fact.
I don't know. It's just in these old dictionaries, that's how they write it. So, the reason why I bring all this up is, what is so important about these four clans? They have different jobs, right?
Yeah.
So, Merari, what do they do? They're carrying the skeleton, right? The framework of the tabernacle, the wood and the beams. Gershon, the curtains and the ropes. Sorry? The cloth. Kohath, they're carrying the menorah, the altar, the holy stuff. Utensils, let's call them that. And then, what about the Aaron's people? They are carrying the ark, right? Well, it's not Kohath, right? Anyways, maybe you double check that. So they have their specific things that they do as well. And anyways, the stuff we've read earlier in Numbers 1 through 5, I think were the main chapters, goes into all of these tasks that they have to do. And so they are here in the center. And so what we just read, we go back to our Numbers 10. It says, it gives this order of how things are broken down with the camps moving. And where is the section on Levi? Numbers 10. Right? The Kohathites.
Because Numbers 3:31, their responsibilities include
they're saying is that these first early chapters detail all the tasks in detail. And now what we're talking about is that we're on the move. And how are we going to get moving? Who's going to move? Who's going to move first? And whatever. And what are the signs that make us move?
What
are the whistle calls? Yeah, where it's one trumpet, two trumpets, and if it's one, it's two, it's that one lot of people come, and if it's only one, somebody else comes.
So according to the numbers 10, who moves first?
Judah.
Judah moves first. Okay, and then who moves second? Reuben, the ones in the south. Then who moves after Reuben and his three tribes? Verse 21.
The Kohathites.
How do you say that? So they're going to right here, Numbers 10, 21. And they're taking what they take, the articles. Then who comes next in verse 22? Ephraimites, so that's the west. Scroll down just a little more. I know this might be boring for the average Bible study, but let's just get it in our mind. Then the camp of Dan, right? Verse 25. So these guys go next. And is that it, according to Numbers 10? Dan? Right. I don't know. They're not mentioned. They get left behind.
Well, they have to go before the 2.5. Because it says the tabernacle should already be set up, and then the Kohathites bring the holy things, because the tabernacle was set up before they arrived.
But they haven't even left yet. Well, I think the Kohathites are dealing with the holy utensils, the interior parts, right? And so this is the whole tent structure, these two tribes. So they're not mentioned, but right, it does make sense that they have somehow gone on ahead or something, but they're not mentioned here. That's something to notice.
Verse 17, tabernacle was taken down, and the sons of Gershom and the sons of Merari set out carrying the tabernacle.
Okay, sorry. So that's
so
after...
Basically, they said that they've got to get going.
Okay, sorry.
Set the whole thing up. And by the time the goodies arrive, they
okay. Up. Here, let's just change all of this. So, Judah, then these guys are two. Then it's Reuben. Then it's Kohath, four. Then it's the west camp of Ephraim. And then it's Dan, six. Does everybody agree on that?
They all go together. They cannot be people going ahead because they wouldn't know where to go.
Well, sure, but this is the order, correct? Yeah, this is the order.
Of course, verse 25 says that Dan is the record. So he's the last. There's no one behind him.
That's right, exactly.
So where does the ark come?
Sorry? With Kohath. Judah, Merari, Gershom, Reuben, then Kohath and the Ark and everything, then the Western Camp, Ephraim, and then Dan. Is that good? All right. But that's not what we're talking about this morning. What we're talking about is what comes next. No, not what comes next. What comes before. And the reason why I wasn't so interested in continuing the reading is because what we're trying to do is we are reading through sections of the scripture of the Torah that were read during the time of Jesus in the synagogue here in the land, and the connections that they would make with prophetic scripture. And so ultimately this is the focus this morning. But just to kind of tie together our ends, I was talking about the summary here. We read about the two silver trumpets. We read about the order of marching. That's this confusing thing here. And then we read next was about Moses' father-in-law, right? What's his name?
Hobab.
Okay, so it's Hobab. But how do most of us know him by?
Jethro.
He apparently has multiple names. So there's all kinds of. There's all kinds of discussions about what this is all about. But in Numbers, his father-in-law is known as Hobab. In Exodus, he's known as Jethro. Reuel, is that also Exodus?
Yeah.
I
think so.
Okay, and then we go to chapter 11. And there's
complaining.
And what's the complaining about?
Food.
In this regard.
Okay.
Americans
complaining about the food. And so what does God send?
And it's interesting, it's a mixed multitude who were doing the complaining. So there were a whole bunch of non-Israelites who were...
Verse?
Four.
It says the mixed multitude.
Four. I've got mixed.
I know, but the word is not so clear. It's kind of the sweep of the camp.
So
swept up stuff, like a leftover kind of
the riffraff.
So, in Exodus 12,
it doesn't imply.
In Exodus 12, 38, it talks about a mixed multitude. And so I think this is where people harmonize the two ideas. But
is it the same word?
No, it's a different word.
What's the Exodus one?
It's 12:28. Sorry, 12:38. So, right, there's complaining about food, and so what does God give them?
Meat.
Gives them meat? What kind of meat?
Yes, I've seen it only comes once in the Bible here.
Right.
So, you gotta
quails. But before he gave the quails, what did he give them?
Manna,
that's right. So, the manna came down during what time of the day?
Morning.
It was there when the dew during the night. And, right. And later on, after he gives them the meat, we didn't read it here in this section, they start dying from food poisoning or something. Or just God poisoned the meat. It's interesting. Like, yeah. But it's not in our section, and we don't have time to talk about it.
Well,
so,
I think it's really important to note, what I love about Numbers specifically is Aaron and Moses' intercession for the people. I mean,
right.
Their frankness before the Lord. He's like, listen, why would you put this heavy weight on me? And just, I think it represents our ability to come to the Lord with our hearts, exactly the way we feel, exactly the way that are, and on behalf of other people. Like,
yeah.
I just think there's that amazing representation of what it is to really carry someone in intercession before the Lord.
That's right.
To be open and see the Lord move.
Right.
But also having the honesty to say, hey,
yeah.
I know, what a weight you give me. I can't handle this. It could be anything. It could be your house, your home, your family, the church.
I think it's the transparency, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The
it's transparency and honesty before the Lord, because I think we play games sometimes. Oh, Lord, help me. You know, it's said of being really transparent. I really can't handle it.
Because there's nothing really righteous about Moses here. He's, like, the people were complaining, and then he complained. So he didn't give an example here. You know, they're complaining about food, and then he's complaining about these losers. You know, it wasn't
it wasn't his idea.
I don't see the parallel. I see the people complaining, and then he takes some sort of responsibility. I mean, okay, he complains, but he's not joining the complaint. I mean, what?
No, I didn't say he joined with them.
No.
But I'm saying he didn't stand up and say, you know, I'm going to give my life for you, and I'm sacrificing there. It's like,
no, but I like this word transparency.
So he complained to God, but he has over and over in this journey in the wilderness.
Right.
He has. He's
from the very beginning.
Put his own self between them, and he has, you know, with the censors and all these things that he has. But in this case, you're right.
He gets to the end of his tether. Let's put it that way.
I don't know, though. It's just interesting. God. A lot of them keep dying throughout this whole journey, and it's almost like he's, what do you call it, separating the, when you cull the herd. yeah, it's, yeah. Anyways, I don't want to focus on this because this is a whole, you're right, you could do a whole Bible study on just this idea of the character of Moses in the midst of complaints and you know, why have you afflicted me like this, God? So it is refreshing to see that the holy people in the Bible, that the so-called holy people that we follow, are just like us. They're just like us. So, but this morning, let's go back to the Numbers 10, and before we go back and read Numbers 10 again. Let's read the Isaiah 27:13.
So it shall be in that day, a great trumpet will be blown. They will come who are about to perish in the land of Assyria, and they who are outcast in the land of Egypt, and they shall worship the Lord in the holy mount at Jerusalem.
All right. Excellent. So what's our connection here between Isaiah and Numbers?
Trumpet.
Yep. Actually, it's not the trumpet.
Is it the same word, by the way?
It's no, it's not.
It's a shofar here.
Yeah, it's a shofar here.
It's a shofar here. It's,
and Numbers.
It's a silver trumpet.
Yeah, it's Chatzotra.
Say it again.
So, the shofar, probably everybody here knows what a shofar is. It's the ram's horn, which today it's not a ram's horn. I think they're all made from antelope in Africa, right?
Except for the new ones, which are about to be made.
Okay,
from Jacob's sheep.
I'm sure, yeah.
And they're making
and
they had a whole bunch of sheep who died recently, and so they've got a whole lot of real ram's horn shofars now for sale.
So Isaiah 27:13 is talking about a shofar. We all know this. Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. It's the thing you buy on Ben Yehuda, take home as a tourist gift. Numbers 10, we're talking about these two silver trumpets. The word is Chatzotra.
Right, indeed, but I never command it.
And it's plural, so it's Chatzotro. Sorry. So, Chatzotra. I'm not an expert in ancient trumpets, but I have a feeling they're probably long and skinny, like this.
Yeah.
And it says Isha. That's like one piece.
Right. What, that two trumpets are made from one piece?
No, I think that
Oh, yeah.
My girlfriend has two silver trumpets which we blow at the new moon on feast days and fast days. And they're real silver. I think she got them from the Temple Institute. They're about this long and they're absolutely fabulous. Fabulous, fabulous.
Okay, so I think the connection here between these two is not based off of what kind of instrument they're blowing, but off of that they are blowing. That's the same word in Hebrew, to blow, you know, a trumpet, whether it's this kind of trumpet or a shofar. Something is being sounded or blown. So this morning, I'd just like us to kind of think about in the Bible, or before we get to the Bible, let's go back to Numbers 10 and just look at the different reasons for why things are being blown here in Numbers 10. And just start from the top of Numbers 10. Yeah, it really was.
It says that there are two things, for calling the congregation and for directing the movement of the camp.
Okay, so let's put that down. You're going to be calling the congregation together. And then, what was the other one?
Directing the movement of the camp.
Okay, so like
marching orders.
Orders. And then keep going, the next verse, what's it say?
And then one trumpet for the leaders to come together.
Okay, one is for the leaders, and one is for the body.
Yeah, the two
this
together.
This is for two?
The two is the... Is
one
it?
For the leaders.
Or in the congregation is two trumpets.
So these are the trumpets. You blow with two trumpets, you call everybody together. If you blow with one, you call just the leaders together. What else with the blowing here?
You do a blast, it's for morning of war.
Right, so that's in
verse 9. Sound an alarm with the trumpets.
Yeah, you see in verse 9 if there's a war or enemy coming.
It's interesting, when you sound the advance, if you blow it once, when you sound the advance, the camps that lie on the east side shall begin their journey. But when you sound the advance the second time, then this... Oh, I see. So it's toot for one and toot for the next, right?
No, I think it's just, you know...
When you sound the advance the second time...
Yeah.
Then the caps... I mean, so you've got to listen for each blast in turn.
Yeah.
To be moved.
Code.
What?
It's a code. So it's not the number of trumpets.
No, it's not the number of blows. It's just... The first blow is east, the second blow is whatever.
It's, you know, it's, this is all what you have in armies today.
Yeah.
Today they probably have radios and digital things, but you think back 100 years ago, there would be, you know, the cavalry charge and the bagpipes.
Yeah. But in verse 10, also when you bring your offerings and you're excited, you're happy.
Yes.
And you also...
Yes, that's
was
verse
the appointed what? Feast, and if you look at something like Psalm 83, I think, it's to blow the trumpet on the appointed feast, which are basically the full moons of Passover, Shavuot, and Passover.
Let's read it. Numbers 10:10. Also in the time when you rejoice, such as on your appointed festivals, or at the beginnings of your months, which is your new moons, you must blow with your trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings so that they may become a memorial for you before your God. And then Gemma just referenced Psalm 81, verse 3, and that says... Psalm 81, verse 3. And anyone has it, you're welcome to read it before I get there. Sound the ram's horn on the day of the new moon, so the shofar, and on the day of the full moon when our festival begins, which is, you know, the chagim.
Yeah.
So
it's basically Passover and...
These are all toots.
And Sukkot.
Rather than
blasts. And like,
I didn't know what you said, Sean.
They're toots.
There's two... How are you differentiating between that, though? How do you know it's a toot and it's a blast?
Well, lehalia.
Yeah. So t'ua and t'kua, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, so there's two different words in Hebrew. Tula with a vesh, with a R, is more of this blast, like emergency or let's go to war.
So if I translated as alarm.
Alarm, right. And then kua is the one of you're playing it.
Yeah.
And very often in shul, the end of Yom Kippur or on some high holiday, Feast of Trumpets, one hopes, but it doesn't always work that way, they actually tell you what the sound is, what the name of the blast is.
Yeah.
Okay, so in Numbers 10, it basically lays out assembly, how you assemble the people or the leaders, how you march out with the camps, how you go to war or be warned there's war coming, and also about rejoicing. Those are kind of the major areas that Numbers 10 is talking about. Now I want you to think about the Bible. Think about references or stories in the Bible involving horns or blowing.
Joshua.
Okay, the most famous is probably Joshua and Jericho. What's the story with that, with the horns? How do the horns with blowing play a part in the story of that giant? The last day, after they march around seven times, they blow what? Shofar, right? They blow shofars. So,
but do they march for seven times in silence, right?
Yes.
7 days they walk in silence. Yeah. 6 days they walk in silence.
7 days.
But for me, I just want to talk about the blowing. That's all I want to, because we don't have too much time left. So they blow shofars, the walls fall down. The walls of their enemies, right? Another story. What do you think of? Like Judges. Gideon. That's probably the second most famous story of horns. What does Gideon... Right. So Sinai has the sound of the horns as well, the shofar. Maybe you can find that verse. But Gideon's probably the second most famous story of horns, right? Gideon and his guys surround the Midianites, and it's at night, and then they crack their lamps, and then they blow their shofars, and they defeat their enemies. Ehud, if you remember the guy who's left-handed, the judge who's left-handed, he takes a knife and he stabs
the fat guy,
Eglon, in the stomach, and all of his intestines spill out. It's a great story for kids to read, because it's very descriptive and gross.
I'm glad you did.
And I won't go into what other part it describes, but it says that he then blows a shofar to tell everybody, hey, you know, the king is dead. Like, it's time to attack. So you think of, again, it's this idea of war, of letting people know, let's get going. Saul, in 1 Samuel 13:3, blows a shofar when the Philistines are coming. Who was David's right-hand man?
Joab.
Three times he blows a shofar in all of his wars and battles, and they're always to stop the army from attacking. So it's not just charge, but it's also stop, retreat. So he has three, there's three examples there. Besides war, can you think of stories involving the shofar or blowing?
In the Old or New Testament?
Just in the Old for now, yeah. The Hebrew scriptures. What about when Solomon is anointed king?
They
blow a shofar there. Do you remember a guy named Sheba in the time of David? He rebelled against David's rule. So what did he do? He blew a shofar. Sheba. It's 2 Samuel 20, verse 1. So again, it's kind of the same idea of, like, hey, violence is coming, or we need to do some violence.
But also it's this word alarm. which could be alarm positive and alarm negative.
Yep.
Don't, you know, I've killed the king, don't do this. Or you just describe Joab warning people not to attack. So it's
also the conspiracy against the Italian queen.
Yeah.
All the conspirators and the new king, it says all the people are blowing trumpets.
Is there a difference in context between blowing a silver trumpet and blowing a shofar?
No. Yeah, I was going to point that out, that in Numbers 10, it's talking just about these silver trumpets.
Yeah.
But if you read through all of these examples, not all of them, but there's a couple examples where it says you hear the shofar, you hear the silver trumpet being blown
right.
in the same context. So they obviously have some specific things that differentiate them, and I'm not an expert in it, but in general, they're both sounding this kind of loud noise that does all of these things. It says go to war, you know, charge, stop, get ready, here comes the enemy.
And I'll just ask you, blow the trumpet in Zion and sound the alarm of the army. Is it the shofar or the trumpet?
It's the shofar.
I would say trumpet, so I should change it.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why it says trumpet in English is because in Greek, the word, they use the same word to translate shofar or the silver trumpet. Because I guess, yes,
Sarkingos.
Sarkingos, yeah.
Where's that come from, verse you just quoted?
Sarkingos.
Joel
2.
So, in other words, the silver trumpet one can say is with the tabernacle temple and the shofar.
It sounds like it. Like, if you go to the Israel Museum or you go to the Temple Mount and you come up to the Stone of Trumpeting, it's that cornerstone and it has that Hebrew inscription. You know, this is the place of the trumpeting, which is the
silver.
Yeah. You always see a diagram of a silver trumpet being blown because they would blow it for, like Jim was pointing out, new moons, Shabbats, holidays, or things related to worship.
The Feast of Trumpets.
Like, even today in Jerusalem, on Friday night, when you hear the siren go off, it's not that we're getting bombed, it's that Shabbat is starting. So it's that same idea continues on in sirens today. That's our modern day shofar, silver trumpet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because that's what a siren is for war, yeah.
It just says a different, so I mean, it goes up and down for war. Just
stays
the war, stays.
Yeah. So let's bring it all to this now. When we come to the prophets and they talk about the blowing of the shofar, you brought in Joel already. He's a prophet. What's the context of the book of Joel? Alarm. What in Joel? What's the problem there? We've talked about Joel quite a bit in this Bible study. People are dying of hunger. There's no food. There's famine. And the day of the Lord is how it's being described. If you go to Ezekiel 33, you know, it's the same idea of an enemy is getting ready to attack. Be ready. Hosea 5:8, Amos 3:6. It's often connected to, we're in trouble. It's like, you know, a siren going off, go to your bomb shelter type of thing.
But in Joel, it's, we've rebelled, we've turned away, we've got famine.
Actually, Joel doesn't say we've rebelled,
no, I know.
We've turned away. Exactly. Yeah.
Your drunkards.
No, Joel doesn't. Joel, you got drunkards in Joel?
I've got drunkards in Joel. Wake you drunkards and weep and wail all you drinkers of wine because of the new wine that's been cut off from your mouth. But we're talking about a sort of a famine.
Right.
A famine of the people. And yet in the same context, we're talking, the Lord's talking about the day of the Lord is coming. I'm going to do a new thing. I'm going to pour out my spirit on, you know, the whole thing about...
Right.
You know, your young men will dream dreams. I'm not sure if you're old or young, whether you're having visions or dreams. But anyway, whatever it is. I mean, it's almost similar to the numbers thing, which is, here I'm giving you this great order, I'm giving you a whole thing, and yet you're still complaining, and that we haven't really gone on yet. But it's like the Lord is, even though when we complain and we whinge on about things and things are really terrible, the Lord is saying, I've got the whole thing in hand. I'm going to bring a new day. I'm going to return. Blow the trumpet in Zion. You know, the sound an alarm on my holy hill. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. Although it's a day of darkness and gloominess, it's like the morning clouds spreading over the mountain, and something good is coming out of it all. It's
right, because if we look at all these examples, when you blow it, they have different purposes. Whether it's to march, whether it's to attack, whether it's to be ready to be warned. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, always.
I mean, like Isaiah 27 in my version,
yes,
called deliverance.
Yes.
And I feel like that's what it's unto. All of those things are unto deliverance. That, you know, even in the war, you know, he's delivering them into a new place.
Well, so that's what I want to point out here. In Isaiah 27:13, it's not a warning. It's deliverance. At that time, a large shofar, which is interesting there, shofar gadol, will be blown, and the ones lost in the land of Assyria will come, as well as the refugees in the land of Egypt. And they will worship the Lord on his holy mountain in Jerusalem. So here again, we've been doing this Bible study the last 3 years or so, and we keep coming across the connections to Jerusalem in the prophetic sections. That Jerusalem is a focus here in these readings, and they're going to come worship the Lord on the holy mountain in Jerusalem. So what's the connections you could see with Numbers 10 here from that? And we just read.
The Lord is in their midst.
Yep, the Lord's in their midst. Right, right. And what
and specifically here, the tribes taking their positions, being called to come together, right? Because they would call to assemble the people, mm-hmm. They'd come together, you'd call the leaders to come together, you do it in time of rejoicing and worship, right? So it really does seem like Isaiah 27:13 could be alluding back to this type of thing here in Numbers 10 of we're coming together. It's a time of worship. It's a time to be brought together.
Would that be similar to when the Jewish people were called back into Israel?
Yes. So, you know, there's the sections in Isaiah that talk about come from the east, south, north, and west. And you can see that even here in this crazy diagram that we did, east, south, north, and west, you've got already kind of like a microcosm of the diaspora, maybe, if you want to get prophetic or spiritual.
I was wondering, in Isaiah, it says, they will come who are about to perish in the land of Syria. Where's Isaiah writing from? Are they in Assyria now or not?
What do you?
It shall be in that day, the great trumpet will blow. They will come who are about to perish in the land of Syria. I got in English.
Well, it's in the present tense, the ones that are perishing.
In Syria.
Yeah.
In Assyria.
Yeah.
And they who were or are outcast in the land of Egypt is presumably looking back. And this.
No, I mean, it's still the same idea of it's like talking about what's happening now to these people.
So basically, they're all going to come together to worship the Lord in the holy mount of Jerusalem.
It's empty.
But has Jerusalem been rebuilt at this point?
Well, okay, so this is another thing to ask about Isaiah. The situation with Isaiah is, who's in Assyria? Right? We know they're... Well, which Israel is in Assyria? The 10 northern tribes, right, are taken to Assyria. Who's in Egypt?
Those that wanted to go to the town of Jeremiah and wanted to go back to Israel.
Okay, so it depends how you want to read it and interpret it. Remember, Jeremiah ended up, he died in Egypt, right? Jeremiah was taken to Egypt against his will by the people who rebelled against the Babylonian rule in the land. And so, you know, the time of Jesus, when you come, Alexandria had a huge amount of Jews that lived there. And so when it talks about Jesus being born, where does his family flee to from Herod? Egypt. Why do they flee to Egypt? Because there's a lot of Jews that have lived in Egypt for about 500 years at that point. It's a massive community. So it's like going to Brooklyn today if you're Jewish. What? Right. But it's a second home in the diaspora. Yes. The historical Isaiah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we should belabor this point right now, but what I do want to focus on here is that there's a historical context of what's happening then. Now, if you want to go ahead and read today in modern Israel and say the Iraqi Jews who came in the 1950s and the Egyptian Jews who came around the same time, that's something else. But if you want to stay in its original historical context, that's what it's talking about. Now, I want to end with one verse from the New Testament that I think echoes this verse. It's in Matthew 24. And if you want to turn there, Matthew, let me just get the Bible here. Let's turn to Matthew 24. Go down to verse 31, I think it is. Actually, let me start in 29. Matthew 24:29. Immediately after the suffering of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven and the powers of heaven will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. And I don't want to go into all of the end times teachings because there's a whole broad spectrum of it, and I think half the time people get it wrong. But just understand that there's a whole layer of the prophets in here. This is coming from, I think it's Isaiah 13 and 34 and Joel 2. And these texts have been woven together like a tapestry here. And then there's the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. Okay, here's where we go. And all the tribes of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man arriving on the clouds of heaven. And this, you know, Daniel 7, very famous. And he will arrive with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet blast. And they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So this is kind of what we were leading up to with what people were saying about, does this reflect modern day Israel? Or that you can see this idea of the four winds. We think about, you know, east, south, west, north, like with the tribes. And, you know, who are these elect? Obviously, in the biblical context, we're talking about the Jewish people here. But the focus is that loud trumpet blast, that it's calling and it's a warning on one hand, but in our context, really we're talking about redemption here, that it's salvation and to be listening for it in our own lives.
Do you want to say? I think it's just keeping the word authority, right? There's such authority on the blast of the trumpet prophetically, and also just the authority that the Lord's given it in all of these circumstances, and obviously even through the end times. Like, there's so much authority. It's not just something you do to start Shabbat, or something you do to, like, there's real authority in it.
Right. And, you know, if you want to apply it to our own lives, it's, you know, it's not really about trumpets anymore. It's, it could be about your alarm on your cell phone. There's all these kind of reminders that we get. No, Matthew 24:31. And so that is exactly from Isaiah 27, Shofar Gadol.
But he says it's not.
He says he'll send his angels with a big trumpet.
A great sound, I thought.
And then, you know, all the peoples will be gathered. So it's implied a blast, just a ritually said.
Yeah.
But I think what
Kenneth
said just now about authority, the authority of the blast. And even if you go back, and I mean, I was thinking about it when we, in Numbers, the beginning of Numbers 10, all the time, it's like there's an authority in what the Lord is doing. He's setting it up in this way, and the people have to obey. And if they don't, they end up in trouble in one way or in another. And that's what the relevance is, I think, in our own lives. And that we do get warnings, we do get sudden whatevers. And it can be very humbling when you miss the thing. I mean, some people know what's happened to me this week. I mean, it's and I just think this word authority and obedience and heeding and listen to what the Lord is saying is just really important. It's not just chitter-chatter.
Because I see that if you are marching, you know the next trumpet's going to be those. You know, need to know where you are when you're hearing the next one. So you're expecting the next one to come.
Yeah.
It's not as if you hear the next one, no, this is to march, but I'm already marching.
Right, you're prepared.
You're prepared for the next one to come. It doesn't just arrive.
Yep.
The next trumpet, you know the whole story.
Yeah, I think it's a good start that we have trumpets preparing us for action. So, yes. You know what? They're preparing us. So, God is good. God is all powerful. Let's celebrate Him and not be feared of anything else that's happening. And this, to me, is a logical order.
Yep. There's security there in the framework that God gives.
And if you think of an army marching, it gets its word to go. In this case, they've had a trumpet and they're going to go. They then march. They march together. They march in line. They do this, that, or whatever. It's not a sort of straggle of everybody just tattering along as they feel like it. And I think that's another concept. I mean, and we talk about Him as being the Lord of hosts, the commander of the armies of God. And I mean, we don't always behave like that. We're always doing our own thing. And I know
this. God has order in everything.
Hmm?
God has order in everything.
Absolutely.
He's
the God of order.
Yes.
Order.
Also, in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 8, again, if the trumpet does not sound a clear call, who will get ready for battle?
Very good. Where are you?
1 Corinthians 14, verse 8.
It's talking about speaking in tongues. It's very interesting there.
1 Corinthians 14.
We'll save it for later. Okay. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.